This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Good to be with you today, Matt and Patrick. Speaking of Patrick's, Patrick Cooligan joins Brett coming up here in the 4 o'clock hour to talk some of the latest news. And Terry John Zila makes his triumphant return, our food expert extraordinaire. They got the State Fair foods out here. We'll get his thoughts on those and which one he thinks are pretty good. Patrick, how are we today?
Doing well. We watched the home run derby last night. That was your TV offering for last night.
That was it.
Baseball on the All-Star break.
I still don't understand why Major League Soccer just doesn't load up this week with games. You know, just and not have them air only on Apple TV. Vlad Jr., right?
Yep, from the Toronto Blue Jays, yes.
Saw a great picture of him with his dad when he played for the Montreal Expos. Oh, what a very good picture there. That's good. And then an All-Star game tonight, we only have one twin there, right?
I believe so, because I think Pablo Lopez was the replacement for Sonny Gray.
So, because they generally will try to get one player for each twin team. They try to, at least.
Yep.
Have they recently changed that where there are some teams that didn't get no one?
Each team has to have a player selected, but they do not have to be there if it's not convenient.
All right. We got this scent thing here, one of these infusers in the studio now. Someone's completely made over my studio, and I love it. Oh, it is fantastic. Because this was a frat boy house for a long time, and now it actually feels like I'm gonna pan the camera over here. If you're watching there, you can see it actually looks nice and decent here. I actually have started, just to show that I'm committed, I've started wearing pants. So it's a lot of things here. So we've got an infuser here, which has got some interesting scents here. I don't know how it works. I can't imagine I could break this. Anyway, eucalyptus, spearmint, wintergreen. Ooh, the scent of mental clarity. Ooh, okay. Do you have any idea what the mental clarity scent is? Because I have clearly never smelled that. Let's see. Rub 2 to 3 drops on palms. Rub over nose and breathe deeply 5 times. Rub excess oil on shoulders and scalp. Okay. It's peppermint, lemon, grapefruit, lavender, rosemary, rosemary, basil, and organic. I love chicken breast myself. So when I rub it on my scalp, it's like I'm rubbing in a marinade on a chicken breast. Oh, Harry, who doesn't love that? Good eating. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Patrick, stop everything, man. Before you get into your next topic, I've got breaking news here from Political Wire. This dated at 3:58 p.m. this afternoon. The Minnesota GOP is broke. Yay! This is not a joke, by the way. Political Wire has reported the Minnesota Republican Party has 53 whole dollars of cash on hand, according to the FEC filings. 53 whole dollars. Wow. Hey, Minnesota GOP, I've doubled your entire account in my own wallet. Here you go. Here's 100. Well, almost. It's 100. It'd be 106. But I think I got 6 here somewhere. But needless to say, look at that. Drool over it, GOP. Drool over it. The liberals control the money now. So you say you're with the party of fiscal responsibility, but you're dead broke. What does that tell you? This is, by the way, I just posted this morning. The Michigan GOP is bankrupt. The Arizona GOP is bankrupt. Now the Minnesota GOP, bankrupt morally and, as well politically as well as financially. Bankrupt. And here's what I'll say is, if you're wondering what this really impact is, it doesn't really impact, the GOP candidates in each of those states for like a governor's race or the U.S. Senate, U.S. House races. Those are going to get funded. What it does kill the GOP in is on the local races. And the House races all next year, basically, their whole thing is, you're on your own. We're a united party, but don't look for us for handouts. Good luck. Yeah, all your money next year is going to be going to the U.S. House candidates and whoever is the chum balloon that's going to get destroyed by Amy Klobuchar in that Senate race. So, good luck. Good luck out there. And reminder, your campaign is basically no paid sick family leave. We're going to make you pay for school lunches again. And we hate dope. And we're gonna force you to bend to our will. We're Republicans. We got $53. You know, I just had breakfast this morning with my daughter. Oh, when I went to Uptown Diner, when I had breakfast this morning, I think that was $58 with tip. You guys can't even have breakfast. Do you sell them in any other number besides 12? Okay, I'll have 9.
I mean, even if David Hahn took his family of four to, I mean, I don't know how big his family is, but if he takes them to McDonald's, could he even cover that with 53 bucks?
You're going to get pretty close. You're going to get close. This is not the first time you guys have been bankrupt. Remember when they moved they rolled the moving trucks up to, oh God, that was one of the best days ever. Hilarious. It was Sutton, wasn't it? I think it was the GOP was Sutton was back then. Basically, there's a whole bunch of financial shenanigans going on there within the GOP, if I remember correctly. By the way, I ran into Sutton over at the Minnesota History Museum. He saw me, and he knew it was clear he knew exactly who I was. The fastest he could move, he kind of skedaddled the other way. But there you go. Once again, breaking news, the Minnesota GOP has $53 whole. That's not even, by the way, how many House districts is that? That's not even that's like 50 cents. It's less than 50 cents per district. But we're the party of fiscal responsibility. Hey! God, how many of your candidates have like $200,000 worth of credit card debt? I mean, what is up with that? How do you... 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I could talk about the demise of the GOP all day long. But I think I want to start off today with a story that made me kind of go, say what now? Now, I want to remind everybody out there, the right-wing media in this town has, for the last 2 weeks, tried to talk about the hellscape. That's Minneapolis. Because apparently some teenagers in Minneapolis have fireworks, which teenagers everywhere have fireworks during the week of the 4th of July. It just is what happens, and they set them off in towns and cities. There's actually multiple fires that have been reported statewide because of fireworks. There are kids that fire fireworks at individuals. You know, just good fun. Needless to say, but you have to understand, for the right-wing media, the people who are firing off the fireworks in Minneapolis, that's the real story, because they could care less about fireworks anywhere else. Like that marina out on Lake Minnetonka that was half burnt down by some kids with some fireworks. That's not a real story in their mind. And as a matter of fact, I want to point out again that the right-wing media in this state basically tried to characterize over-the-counter fireworks that you can buy at any grocery store, Target, whatever, as some sort of military-grade ordnance that was, they used, if we could only get that stuff over to the boys overseas, oh boy, that would clear up make it an even playing field. It was fireworks, dude. And don't get me wrong, they were being stupid, and they've arrested some of them for being stupid, as they should, but it's not a hellscape apocalypse zone. Just stop. But needless to say, I'm going to bring that up before I get to this next story. Are you ready? Are you buckled in? Okay. A husband and wife from Blaine have been charged in connection to an explosion at a Blaine apartment complex early this year, accused of mixing household chemicals to make explosive materials known as TAPT. John Lee Boatner, 28, and Taylor Ann Boatner, 27, both of Blaine, are now charged in Anoka County Court with various felonies, including explosives and incendiary device violations. The charges stem from an incident on March 3rd when police responded to a report of an explosion at the couple's apartment on the 111 block of 116th Avenue Northeast in Blaine. Charges say Lee Boatner was mixing household chemicals to make an explosive known as triacetone triperoxide, or TATP, and suffered serious injuries to his hands. His wife, Taylor Boatner, was also injured, and their now three-year-old son was home when the explosion happened but wasn't injured. The explosion caused significant damage to the apartment, including shattering the windows and blowing debris into the neighboring vehicles. The case has also been sent to the FBI for further investigation. According to the criminal complaints, Blaine officers responded to the apartment complex of a man identified as Lee, who had severe injuries to his hands. Callers had reported to police they heard a loud explosion, so Boatner in the hallway bleeding with critical injuries. His wife, Taylor Boatner, was bleeding, sitting on the floor holding their son. The couple had taken to the hospital for their injuries. The child was home at the time of the explosion, though he was in a different room. He did have a burn from a drain cleaner the week before. Okay. The police chief, the Minneapolis Police Bomb Squad and the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives responded to the scene. Investigators concluded a large explosion occurred in the primary bedroom of the apartment, noting they had found a plastic child's cub that appeared to contain a tub containing explosive materials. The criminal complaint describes the scene where the explosion occurred. Catch this. Because this is not messing around. This is not fireworks and hellscape war zone. This is actually war zone stuff in Blaine. As police entered the apartment, there was a strong odor of an unknown chemical, which also consisted of a burn scent. There was smoke at the top of the ceiling, blood on the floor and walls of the apartment. In the living area, the TV on the east wall in the living room had been damaged, and the screen was hanging on the floor. The bedroom had a blood splatter on the ceiling, walls, doors, and floor. Yikes. The explosion had occurred near the exterior window of the bedroom. It shattered from the inside out. The screen was missing, and the blinds and the holes in them were hanging partly on the window. There was a light haze in the apartment, the smell that was believed to be from a battery. While standing in his Alina placed Lee Boatner on the stretcher, police heard Boatner tell paramedics that a battery had exploded. The Minneapolis Bomb Unit team noted in its report there is no evidence of a battery exploding. There weren't any battery components in the bedroom, such as battery housing, cells, wiring, or circuit boards. Given the extent of damage that occurred in the bedroom, it was unlikely that damage was caused by a battery exploding. Police observed blood, tissue, and bone matter were on the walls. Yikes! Ceiling and other surfaces of the room, there were pieces what appeared to be computer equipment on the bed and floor. Investigators found an unknown crystal-like substance in glass on the counter, which had tested positive for TAPT. Several bottles of hydrogen peroxide were found in the room. Other necessary chemicals used to make TAPP were found in the kitchen, bedroom, and bathroom. Some of the chemical bottles were empty and some were still full, charges say. Meanwhile, investigators found a receipt from a Walmart in Blaine that shows the purchase of hydrogen peroxide. Police worked with Walmart to obtain photos of the Boatners buying some of the ingredients used to make TAPT. In an interview with police, Tyler Boatner said her husband tried to fix things with her son. He'd recently been laid off. He recently been laid off from a job as a solar electrician. Police searched Lee Boatner's computer, which had a bookmark for information on how to make TATP. Wow. As well as searches for conversions of moles into grams of acetone, how to use TATP as a detonator for ANFO, ammonium nitrate fuel oil, screenshots of a receipt of food-grade hydrogen peroxide. Searches included Blaine water table, poisoning groundwater, Anoka County gas sewer, Minneapolis inceptor drain, and buried explosion. So this is a terrorist. Okay, let's as opposed to the right-wing media that wants to describe black kids in Minneapolis with fireworks as terrorists, this is an actual terrorist making clearly an explosive material and clearly seeming to have a much larger agenda here, which at the very least looks like it's threatening either the city of Blaine, Anoka County, or the city of Minneapolis. So I bring up this whole thing because the right-wing media will not report on this. They just won't. Because, you know why. As they sit there and they try to vilify black kids with fireworks in Minneapolis, here's an actual, what by all accounts, sounds like a terrorist in Blaine making explosives with what seems to be a computer history that shows, well, first of all, lying to the police about what their what exactly happened. A battery exploded when it clearly didn't. And then having what looks to be an agenda on this computer. And the right-wing media will not cover this story because that's not the narrative they want. As a matter of fact, I can guarantee if God forbid, some local homegrown terrorist actually blew up something in Minneapolis, they wouldn't cover that. They would say, there were black kids with fireworks. And that would be the only thing they would concern themselves with. Because this is scary as hell. This is terrifying. I mean, and let's not skip past the fact that these idiots were trying to build explosives in an apartment building with their own kid around them. So two things I want you to ask yourself. What was the goal of this? And two, and here's the one that's going to probably scare you a little bit. You think these guys were acting on their own? You think this was just, you know, these two guys deciding to build some explosives and start searching out water supplies and sewer lines and stuff like that? You think that that's what this is? Just two people? Or could it possibly be that there is a larger group of people that are communicating about a possible strike of explosions? I'm asking the question because my gut feeling tells me is that these guys, this wasn't just these two people alone, that there are probably a lot of people right now who are frantically erasing their phone search history and their computer history in an attempt to say, I have no idea what you're talking about. Because that it's something. You tell me, it sure sounds like a terrorist here, doesn't it? Isn't this what they try to scare you with whenever a minority has an explosive, like a firework? I think we need to have a much deeper, further investigation into what the hell's going on up there. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The progressive voice from Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Tell me that's not a terrorist. Tell me that's not a terrorist. Making explosives in your own house? What were they up to? What were they up to? And once again, I can sit here and say, yeah, kids who are firing fireworks off at police officers and stuff like that, yep, arrest them and stuff like that. That's not trying to create a bomb. And once again, one of the things which you know, should be a little bit concerning for you is that this stuff can be used to as an instigator to to explode the fertilizer bombs, just like Oklahoma City. 952-946-6205. Another odd story. Now we've talked about Levi Axtell. Earlier this year, he confessed to using a shovel and a moose antler to kill a Grand Marais man he believed was grooming his daughter. He has been, by the way, committed to the Minnesota Department of Human Services. Axtell, 27, was found to be mentally ill and dangerous and chemically dependent after court-ordered mental health evaluations. His criminal case has been suspended until he can return to competency. Cook County Attorney Molly Hicken said after a review hearing held via Zoom on Monday. Neither Hicken nor Axtell's attorney, Krista Groschek, objected to the findings that he is not currently competent to stand trial. Dr. Michelle Vietnin reported that Axtell has hallucinations, delusions, paranoia, and severe fluctuations of mood. He appears to see himself as a hero for having killed the alleged victim and believes that others are likely relieved this was taken care of, according to court documents. Vietnin said Axtell, who has been deemed a high risk of suicide, faces a risk of again returning to believing he has nothing to lose by engaging in behaviors that could harm himself or others. He's currently medicated and seeing psychiatric practitioner. Axtell has agreed that he meets the criteria for commitment. Axtell's commitment for chemical dependency is up for 6 months, and his mental health and danger to public finding are up to 90 days. He will be reevaluated in 2 months. Now, so we talked about this story because this is, once again, you have someone who was convicted of, and let me just remind you of the story. On March 8th of last year, Axtell walked into the sheriff's office wearing a bloodied shirt, confessed he had just killed Lawrence Scully, 77 years old. Axtell had sought a protective order against Scully years early because of the elderly man's prison sentence in the 1980s for molesting a six-year-old. Axtell believes Scully was stalking his young daughter and other local children. He was granted a temporary restraining order that was later dismissed. In Grand Marais, a town of 1,300 on the North Shore, there was some support for Axtell, including a truck with a bumper sticker that said, "Love for Levi." He was described as a guy with a big smile and dad jokes. Scully's reputation was more complicated. Rumors swirled in the past that he'd been run until he ran for mayor in 2014, while his prison sentence was confirmed by the Cook County Herald. Grand Marais Mayor Tracy Benson had described the case as painful for two families with long histories in the community. A handful of Scully's family members who live in Grand Marais had security restraining order against him, citing years of sexual abuse and torture. It was active until the day Scully died. Through Patrick Scully and John Scully told the Star Tribune that the filing didn't help. Their oldest brother continued to pop up in the periphery, sometimes in costumes, and watch them. Patrick Scully was quick to offer financial support to Axtell's family following Levi's incarceration. Axtell did not appear. So here you have a guy, Scully, who clearly is, got some issues. He was convicted, sent to jail, got out, was living in the community. People had restraining orders against him. People feel he was bad. When Axtell murdered him, which he did, he murdered him. The thing I said was this, is that you got to prosecute this case because you can't just let someone massacre another person under the guise of I'm doing it for the greater good. I mean, you could have people who think their neighbor's kid is dealing drugs and goes out and shoots that kid in the middle of the street and says, hey, is their argument, I thought they were dealing drugs. I was trying to save all the people that were going to get addicted to drugs and die because of the drug addiction. And, that was the case. Now, that being said, there were quite a few conservatives who were, give him the Medal of Freedom. Give him the Medal of Freedom. Well, now they're basically, it's come on out. He found to be mentally ill, dangerously and chemically dependent. And mentally ill and dangerous, chemically dependent as well. This is a mentally broken individual. And I would make this argument, anyone that murders anyone else is a broken individual. They're mentally broken. This is a guy who also has a chemical dependency. I'm not sure what that means, if that's alcohol, if that's something stronger. But needless to say, even his own lawyer didn't fight putting him into a protective hold because he clearly is not mentally competent to stand trial. This is your great hero. This is the great deliverer of justice who the court, basically the state has basically said, if we release this guy, he'll find someone else to kill, basically. But that's your hero if you're on the right. Scully sounds like a horrible individual. I'm not standing my Scully in any capacity. What I'm standing for is the rule of law and that you just don't murder people. Period. You just don't do that. And you can sit there and say, well, he was a bad guy. Well, sounds like Axtell was a pretty bad guy too. And dangerous to the community. This is a modern day freaking tragedy. There are no winners here. There is no success. There is no finish line. What you have is, Scully dead, Axtell clearly mentally incompetent, and a whole bunch of people asking, which side are we rooting for once again? Some strange days and D's. Let's get Gary in here because I got Terry John Zila coming in here to talk State Fair food in just a bit. Gary, go right ahead.
Hi, Matt.
Hi.
You know, the billionaires pretty much own the media in this country, and I think that's part of the reason why so many people vote the wrong way against their own interests and so forth. But whether it's gun manufacturers, they're in the pocket of them, and you see the results that we're getting now with that. And the greedy healthcare industry, but over half the bankruptcies and a lot of deaths, too, and that greed of that. And then the oil and fuel companies, you know, we're seeing a lot of the results of that now more than ever. So I just want to say it's all about money. And thank you, Matt.
Thank you very much, Gary. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. State Fair has announced their new foods. Terry John Zila, our food expert, will join us when we do return to talk about which ones he likes and which ones he doesn't. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You know the day destroys the night. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Terry John Zila is our food expert, the owner and chef at Hepcat Coffee. He is now the chef and owner of the Gallery Kitchen and Events Center, that taking that over in May. And, of course, he's a fantastic chef who you can vote for. Terry, this is it. Who's running this contest?
It's the James Beard Foundation is the charity that's going to. I know that Carla Hall has been the face of it, and but they do food charities, and a friend of mine entered me, and I just posted some photos, and so far in my group I'm number one, so I'm pretty happy.
I will share the link to this if people would like to vote for you, which you should, because he's an absolutely fantastic chef. You can go out there and make a vote and make sure Terry gets number one on this. That'd be fantastic. And by the way, I don't want to pass back that the event center, nicely done. Have you been rolling that out here?
Yeah, I mean, we really officially launched in June. Okay. We've been doing a lot of events, a lot of breakfasts and lunches for city organizations. And after Labor Day, we're going to be doing cooking classes, cocktail classes, and wine tastings there as well.
And where is that located at?
It's at 370 Wabasha Street North. It's in the Osborne 370 building. My coffee shop, it's the same building as my coffee shop, which is alarmingly convenient.
Well, and I can tell you this. People, if you've not been to Hepcat Coffee and had the Danishes there, you are so wrong. It is the best Danish in town, hands down. And they're just fantastic. And so, once again, that's in the Osborne 360 building, right?
Osborne 370.
370. Okay, 370. That's the next door neighbor building. 370 is the one you want there. Osborne 370.
It's in St. Paul. That address could be 18 blocks away.
That's a good point. All right. So stop by Hepcat Coffee, Osborne 370 building in St. Paul. All right. So I sent you the list of the State Fair foods. Overall, first of all, your thoughts on the new State Fair foods as they've been introduced today?
Well, some of them, I mean, it seems like food that we've seen before.
Yeah.
I mean, which is funny. I mean, at this day and age, everything's been done, but how do you zhuzh it up? I did see the waffle folded around like a breakfast. I don't know. I mean, a limp waffle. That one frightened me. I thought to myself, waffles should need a little blue pill. It just looked, I don't know. That one didn't look so hot to me, but there was like some donuts which looked good and some Greek food. I didn't see anything that was like, oh my God, what's that?
Yeah. Well, I have to admit, there is one that I saw, and the first thing I said is, are you guys sure you want to go down this? And that is...
What? No, don't tell me. It's not a revisit of the Spam Sushi.
No, it's... Okay, are you ready? The crispy...
Hit me.
Crispy lutefisk steam bun. And...
Okay, here's the whole thing. That doubles down. So if you're going to die to something tasting horrible, you might as well batter fry it.
Well, okay, was there really a demand for lutefisk? I mean, it's kind of a comical joke around the holidays, but I didn't think that people were going around, you know what would be tasty in this State Fair? Lutefisk.
You know, it seems like, the thing is, maybe it's not, now is it a vendor that already does something else great?
It is the Olson Fish Company Lutefisk Brine. So I'm not sure that's at there. Okay, let's go. It's going to be at Shanghai Henry's, located in the International Bazaar North Wall.
Okay, God bless them. I mean, honestly, maybe hopefully they have beverages so you can wash it down. I mean, now that got me going. Wouldn't a deep fried herring sandwich taste great?
It'd be better, or a smelt. You know, you could go, you know, if you really, you could do smelt walleye herring. You could do, there's a lot of other ones you could do. I don't just, Lutefisk?
Matt, yes. you could do anything and it would be better than that.
Speaking of walleye, they've got one of the things I did kind of like was the walleye. Where is it? I'm going to pull it up here just so I get the right name here. The walleye fritter pops. Now this actually does look like this might be pretty good. It's basically, you know, like little cake pops, only they look like little fish cakes on a stick.
I'll bet you those are going to be delicious.
I should mention, since they're Giggles Campfire Grill. Giggles, wow. Giggles Campfire Grill, located at the southeast corner of Lee Avenue and Cooper Street in the North Woods. A smoked walleye mixed with a blend of cheeses, dill pickle relish, fresh garlic and spices, rolled on panko breadcrumbs and deep fried, served on a stick with a side of comeback sauce and a lemon slice.
Okay. The smoked walleye is going to taste a little different. It's going to be a little firmer. It won't be as supple. We'll see what happens. Let's try it. I'm going to beat out that thing this year. We take a vacation at the coffee shop for State Fair because downtown St. Paul just vacates that week. But I'll probably be at the State Fair at least three times.
You talk about everything old being new again. Last year, the big one was the pickle pizza. I had it. I did not. Okay, it came down to this. The pizza wasn't really great. It wasn't a great crust. It wasn't a great sauce. It wasn't great cheese. And frankly, the bigger crime for me is if you're going to sell something like pickle pizza, you got to have something better than the cheapest pickles you can find. You could have gone out there with a nice tangy pickle and they were just, you know, kind of the equivalent of a McDonald's pickle without any flavor to them. And I was, you know, I thought it was bad, but needless to say, that seems to be the theme this year. There are so many pickle-related foods this year that that's going to be, I think, the thing that's going to, I guess they're banking on this is doing something better.
Well, you know why that is. Fermentation is really big right now.
Mm.
Well, that's a really big thing. And I think there's a really been great influx of like a lot of Korean food in Minnesota now, like really solid Korean food.
Mm-hmm.
And fermentation's really big in Korean food. And that could be part of it. And I think you're seeing a lot of fermented things in restaurants. So I think people are kind of juicing up. Now, my only fear is that this is the Minnesota State Fair.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't, you know, South Minneapolis or Edina. Mm-hmm. So I think what happens is sometimes when you get these things that frighten folks, it may sound good PR, but are they going to really try it? And are they going to enjoy it?
All right. Let's run through some of the pickle items. I want you to give me a yay or nay what you think about it. Number one, pickle fries. Tangy, crispy, thin-cut dill pickles, lightly coated in cornmeal, seasoned in mustard batter, and then they deep fry them, served with the chipotle dipping sauce at Mike's Hamburgers there. How does that sound?
Sounds busy but interesting.
All right. Paletas. Now, this one's going to blow your mind. This is the Mexican frozen treat on a stick. They're offering two flavors, one of which is a dill pickle lemonade paleta. It's lemon-flavored, water-based, which includes some dill pickle slices. It is vegan. So basically, imagine a popsicle with pickles in it.
Okay. It's just like dating no means no.
You are that's just I right to the point. I appreciate your candor on that. The Miami mango pickles. Now, if any of these guys could win, this might be it. Dill pickles infused with Miami mango punch. This is at Soul Bowl, located at the food building on the east wall. You know, I know that sometimes they try to do that. They'll put something in the brine to try to give it a little bit of flavor. A lot of times it's hot peppers or something like that. Mango, I don't think it'd overwhelm the pickles. It sounds interesting at least.
But the whole thing is, it's a beverage. I've never thought to myself, God, it's such a hot day. Can I get a big glass of pickle juice?
I know people who do. That's the crazy part. I know people that
Matt,
do.
Matt, the scope of people that you know, maybe Woody would like that, but the rest of the world won't.
Okay, so let's talk some of the ones that I looked at that I said, okay, this looks like a winner. I think Minnesota Monthly's already picked this one as the best option. Fried green tomato sandwich, two crispy, locally grown green tomato slices, a crust of Whole Grain Milling Company with cornmeal, mustard, mayonnaise made from Lost Capital Economics coarse spicy ale mustard. Okay. A local lettuce on a toasted brioche bun as well. And they serve it with bacon. And instead, if you want the vegetarian option, you can have it with sweet corn relish. Here's the racket guys came on out and they said, here's the thing about this. It comes down to how well the tomatoes are fried, because if it's fried green tomatoes, I mean, that's it right there. I mean, the quality of the fried green tomato is what's going to make or break this.
And I think here you have to remember, since it's probably going to be mass produced, the tomatoes will probably already be prepped and battered and ready to go for the fryer. I actually think that sounds like a winner.
Okay. Is that your bigger concern too in regards to that? Is that it just comes down to the pickles? If the pickles are good, we're good.
Right. And it depends. It comes down to the prep. And the thing is, with pickles and deep frying, what you have is water issues. So the thing is, it could come right out of the batter, and then it can get soggy in 2 seconds.
Yeah, tomatoes, fried green tomatoes, not pickles on that one there. So, but you know, you're exactly.
Yeah, but in general, but I think that'll be a winner. I think that'll be great.
Here's one. This is sometimes, I think that sometimes the best thing is kind of the easiest thing to look at. This good old-fashioned Americana Midwest food. This is from the Hamlin Church Dining Hall. This is a ham loaf with tangy glaze, caramelized onions and cheese on a sandwich made with fried egg and a whole toast. So it's a breakfast sandwich they're selling there. From the picture they sell, it looks really good. And sometimes, you know,
where are the pickles coming in on this?
There is no pickles on this one. There are so many pickle ones. We're just going to go with the ones that look like they're going to be good this year.
I thought our momentary theme was pickles. You threw me.
So, there are a lot, but not in this one. So, but I mean, this is you have said this before on this show. The church stands there. Do not sell them short. They generally do a pretty good job with the food that they produce.
They're rock stars, because what they do is they know they're feeding a lot of people and they're feeding a huge scope of people. They really book it out. I mean, you get those church basement lady mentality on there, and what they're trying to do is they're trying to serve something that's really solid and really just satisfying, and they're not trying to reinventing the wheel. They're polishing the hubcap. Mm-hmm.
Here's the one I've got the most hope for, and no pickles involved in this.
Thanks for the preface.
The Irish butter ice cream over brown sugar cinnamon toast. It's simplistic. It's, you know, and I've had, you know, Irish butter. I got to believe that that's going to be pretty good.
That sounds like you might want to be alone with it.
It does. That's one. It's like, you know, honey, take the kids. I'll catch up with you later. That sort of thing.
Yeah, that actually sounds pretty darn good. That sounds pretty darn good.
I don't want to say trashy because that sounds like I'm coming in with judgment. But that real, there are a few that are.
Oh, no, you'd never do that, Matt.
No,
would you?
Of course,
you'd never
no.
Judgment,
God,
would
geez,
you?
Me, not at all. Hey, did you hear the GOP has $53 in their bank account? The Minnesota cookie dough pie. Homemade chocolate chip cookie dough in a flaky pie crust dusted with brown sugar.
No.
Why?
If you're that, no. Stop. Okay. No. If I want cookie dough, I'm going to have it baked. I don't care if it's pasteurized. I don't care. No.
There is what was the other one that I saw that I said, you know, if it's kind of, you know, two that are kind of iconic state fair ones. One is the bucket of the birthday cake mini donuts. Now, you and I both agree this is probably going to be
That sounds fun. I like that.
Okay.
Back to the cookie dough pie.
Yes.
Okay, that's the definition of lazy. That was like when I saw on a menu a deconstructed wedge salad. They just took all the ingredients and separated them on the plate. So if you can't bake the friggin' cookie. Is that the underachievers of America booth?
Would they ever allow someone to just give out wedges of iceberg lettuce with dressing? Of course not. They'd say, okay, no, you guys got to jazz this up. But yet we tolerate it with other things.
The, See, now I'm upset. The cookie dough pie. No, now I'm mad.
All right. The cloud coolers. Let me explain these to you. Three choices of lemonade served with cotton candy cloud spun over the drinking straw. Summer strawberry, happy huckleberry, and flower power, which is violet lemonade and the flavor. So basically,
that's actually fun. That's really big in the cocktail world right now.
Okay.
The cotton candy thing. We even do a drink when we do events. We take cotton candy and we put it on top of the martini and then it dissolves. Cotton candy is huge right now.
Mm-hmm. What is your thought? There's two of the items here that have breakfast cereal as a, you know, as a decorative item on it. One of them is got honeycomb on it. The other one's got, looks like fruity pebbles on it. I'm as a person, I like food. I generally, that'd be like putting Twinkies on something or putting a pre-processed thing on it. And to a point, I think that's kind of lazy as far as cooking goes, because you're adding something that's, one, going to overwhelm the flavor of whatever you're adding. I mean, you know, modern day breakfast cereal is extremely ugh. But as well, it just seems like you're, why don't you just sell the bowl of cereal? Because I bet you'd actually sell more of the bowl of cereal than, you know, trying to jazz up cereal on top of something else.
Well, you know what, though, who does a cereal really well is Gail and Christy at Rice Krispie Bars.
Okay.
And they take the Rice Krispie recipe and they actually incorporate cereal in them. Gail and Christy got that down. No one else should touch that, because if you're going to augment breakfast cereal, those girls know exactly what to do.
Well, so here's the one with honeycomb. Listen to this one. This is fried halloumi, which is halloumi, the cheese. It's fried cheese, right, Chopped with hot honey and honeycomb cereal. And, you know, on one
now,
side...
Is it honeycomb cereal?
Yeah.
Or is it honeycomb... the honeycomb brittle.
It's honeycomb cereal from the honeycomb hideout. You know, so it's honeycomb cereal, like from Post that you would get off the grocery store shelf. And the one side of it...
It's too big.
Okay.
Is it crushed up or no?
Somewhat and somewhat not. It looks like they've got some crushed and some not.
Yeah, it doesn't thrill me.
The other one is the fruity cereal milk biscuit, Betty and Earl's biscuit made with fruity cereal mix, cereal bites drizzled with icing on top of it. It looks sickly sweet, I will say that.
Yeah, we actually did a Rice Krispie bar with the fruity pebbles. It's gosh awful sweet. I gotta tell you, it's a lot. It's a lot of sugar.
Well, but I get that. I mean, I can get that with the Fruity Pebbles, because basically you're just taking a Rice Krispie treat, because that still is kind of the cereal. I think when you add it to a biscuit or you add it to cheese, you know, cheese curds, basically, I don't know if it's, you know, if you just want to give out cereal. Don't try to make your item more attractive by just throwing some cereal on top of it.
But that's another trend right now is classic breakfast cereals.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're doing is they're trying to cash in on a trend and have things that people are already talking about and bring it in as a new item. So I get what they're doing. I don't know if it's going to be delicious. I mean, you have to remember, my record at the state fair is 42 food booths in one day.
And he's alive, kids. Here's the one that I think that you and I need to go together and go get. The Galabo, which is going to be over at the Union Mung Kitchen. And that place was the rock star last year. That sausage they had was unbelievable.
It was fantastic.
Traditional Hmong style steam bun stuffed with ground pork, egg and spices, and it's Chef Vang's mom is the where it came from. Served with your choice of crunchy chili oil, hot pepper sauce, lemongrass scallion dressing. It looks phenomenal, and I mean, I love. Go ahead.
Well, they do a nice job anyway, though. When you get a vendor that does a really great job, then when they go off and do something different, you know they thought about it. And again, they're not being cute with it. They're just being thoughtful. And that's what I love. Those are the things, like the guys over at the ballpark, they introduced the deep-fried short ribs.
Yeah.
Now it's a staple. It was something that no one had done before. And now it's like, okay, they weren't trying to be cute. They're just trying to be excellent. And I'm all about that. We're going to go to that one for sure.
Hepcat Coffee over at the Osborne 370 building, also the Gallery Kitchen and Event Center in that building as well. I'll make sure I put out a link for people to go vote for you for best chef. You're phenomenal. Terry, your insight, as always, is good. I'm going to hold you to that. You and I are going to go catch that over at the Union Kitchen, okay?
No, Lou, I'm gonna go on the Calista Flockhart diet for an entire week beforehand.
Okay. we'll get you some of that lutefisk. We'll get you some, that'll take care of things.
No. I'll watch you take the lutefisk.
I'm not doing that. Okay. Terry Johnson.
Honestly, you're more adventurous that way than I am. Make one of the kids get it. That's it.
Oh, that's
make,
a good
that's
idea.
Why you have children. Make them get it.
You're perfect. I'll make Rose take it. All right, Terry Johnson. Terry, thank you very much. I appreciate the time. We got to take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Patrick, of all the things I had just mentioned there, is there one that kind of was saying, you know what? No, I'm hitting that one for sure.
Actually, there was one thing that you and Terry did not talk about. The chicken momo with tomato chutney.
That one does look pretty good. I didn't get time to get to that one. It's basically like a little dumpling.
And the caveat, though, is it's only going to be available for the first half of the fair, so you got to go early if you want to get it.
Okay, the pickles, you know the big pickle stand right off the grandstand there, right?
Yeah.
The reason why they're successful is that they've got good pickles. That's why. A pickle is not just anything. You can't just do a weak pickle and act like you're reinventing the wheel. And that was my big disappointment with the pickle pizza last year, was because I was eating and it's like, hey, the crust isn't that good, the cheese wasn't that good, the sauce wasn't that good, and the pickles weren't that good. But it was gimmicky. Now everyone's trying to do it, and it comes down to it. Now, I'm not going to get the – would you get the frozen treat with the pickles in it?
I like pickles, but that just doesn't quite seem up my alley.
Lemonade and pickles. No. You've got some things which are going to be a bit of a reach, and I got to tell you the truth. I'm more than a little concerned about what that would even taste like. And plus the fact that if it's just a cheap, crappy pickle, you've just wasted my time and my money. So we'll have to see what goes there. I think the Union Hmong Kitchen is probably going to win. I also love the Irish butter ice cream with the French toast. That looks really good. We'll take a break. Hour two, that's coming up next. Hour number two of the show here today. Matt, Patrick, Brett Johnson joining us in studio here. To Brett, as you pointed out, the Minnesota GOP has $53. So jump for it, Republicans! Jump for it! Here, jump for it! You can get it. It's right there. Oh, you missed it. $100 bill. Actually, I got $100 bill here. They could double their GOP bank account. But they're just not fast enough.
And did I hear you right during hour one that there are other Republican parties around the country that are apparently having these problems?
Well, okay, here's the thing which is different. In Michigan and Arizona, they're bankrupt because they spent all their money going to court to try to overturn the elections.
Arizona, yeah, for sure.
And Michigan as well. Yeah. Here, they didn't do that. No one is giving them money right now. And it kind of goes back to last year when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, and I had friends who worked in the people I know who worked in finance for the Republicans and in fundraising and stuff like this, and the phones just stopped. And if you're looking at next year, the U.S. House reps, they're going to get their money. So they're going to get their money. They're going to get whoever the Senate candidate gets destroyed by Klobuchar is going to get their money. But then this is the same thing that happened before. So they're going to look at the House reps and say, you know, unless you're in a real must-hold district, you're not going to get a ding cent from us.
Well, I wonder if CD2 is going to see any Republican money at this point.
Well, that's a question. I mean, it's do you risk throwing a bunch of money at trying to win two and at the same time then basically limit the amount of House seats? Because you got to pick up House seats. And right now, and you're looking like Donald Trump is going to be the top of the ticket. And so, it's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
I would think, they probably would be better off spending that money defending CD1 and 8 if that does end up being Trump, because I could see that not going very well for them at all. I don't think they have a chance in 2 if Trump is the nominee.
8's in trouble. I think 8's in trouble. If it is Trump. Go ahead.
Now, granted, the election is still 18 months away, but you don't see people on the right lining up to run in CD2 at this point either.
Well, there's someone that said they were running. And, you know, what you're not going to see is the Republicans have kind of, you know, danced around a little bit with 5 and 4 a little bit. They're going to completely ignore them. They might throw something a little bit more formidable towards Phillips in 3, but I don't think that's going to go too well. You know, if Finstead is not exactly, you know, resonating greatly, and if they can get a good candidate down there, that could be trouble in 1. I think Stauber's mistake is that he keeps trying to take credit for bills he voted against. And they've got, and that is going to be something I can tell you right now, they're going to paper that district of, he did not do this, we did. And that's going to be very, I think, more difficult for Stauber to win over on that. So, plus the Democrats did a lot of things for the state. So, let's start off with denial road for the Republicans. Because, once again, their entire argument is that no one is in Minneapolis. It's a ghost town, war zone, all these things. I mentioned I was out by the lakes this weekend, and you could walk across Lake of the Isles by just stepping on all the canoes, paddle boats, and kayaks that were going across the thing. I mean, it was that many people out there. I've never seen anything like that. I was like, is there an event going on? No, just people out there having fun. Looked like a blast. The sailboats and the windsurfers are out on the other lakes, you know, on Bidet Makoska and Harriet. So, you know, it was good fun here. But Republicans kind of like to keep saying, no, it's a hellscape. It's horrible. Because they sit in their homes out in the tertiary suburbs and, you know, terrified of going out. And this is the only way they can feel good about themselves. That's just me, though. Minneapolis is the most bikeable city in the United States.
Oh, we overtook Portland.
Was it Portland?
I always thought it was us and Portland that battled it out for that title every year.
Well, it's okay.
Chicago might be up there too. We're one now.
We are, according to a new ranking by People for Bikes, the worst musical ever. Moving up 31 spots from last year's ranking, the city topped other cities such as San Francisco, Seattle, Philadelphia, and Portland. St. Paul is also a top 10 city and 7th overall in the large cities list. The nonprofit People for Bikes compiles the annual list through a data-driven program that evaluates, identifies, and compares the best global cities and towns for bicycling. It ranks different levels of nearly 1,500 cities, large, medium, and small, taking into account the quality of life for cyclists in assessing places such as homes, jobs, trails, parks, retail stores, grocery stores, hospitals, and public transportation. I can't tell you how many freaking people in the middle of winter are biking. I've seen it all over the place now, man. They're biking in winter. Okay, you know, you've got your cred. Minneapolis received an overall score of 68. St. Paul received a score of 51. Cities that earn a score of 50 are considered to be the tipping point to becoming a great bike place. The average score for the U.S. is 27. Yikes. God, that tells me there's a lot of cities I don't want to go bike riding in. The third largest city in the state, Rochester, is ranked 153rd overall in the medium category with a score of 37. Also in the medium category is Minnesota's fourth most populated city, Bloomington, which ranked 466 with a very low score of 15. I thought you could bike over to, if you go down Nine Mile Creek Trail, you can hit, there's a bike trail that runs all the way across Bloomington over to the Mall of America even.
Oh, yeah, that runs all the way out in that area. And you can even go south and take that down to a lot of the good Bush Lake trails. So I'm kind of surprised by that, too, with Bloomington.
Yeah, because all that Bush Lake Park, that's in Bloomington.
Yeah.
There's tons of trails down there.
And then you have the one, as you said, that goes by the mall that you can take that all the way east out towards Eagan. Yeah, there's a lot of trails in Bloomington. I'm surprised by that.
Here's one thing. This happened just today. I'm out at Harriet. There's a dedicated bike trail as you're going around the lake, which I think is perfectly cool. No problem. Guy not in the bike trail, in the road, blocking. And I'm like, okay, we've actually set up it's not a bike trail separate from the road. It's actually the road. It's just got a line there, and you can be on that other side of the line. I don't know if he was just being particular or not, but we got you the lane. Get in the lane. It's your lane. We've done this for you. Also, I should mention, you know, after Metro Transit had that relatively rough story that ran against them in regards to the light rail and the drug usage and other things going on the trains. Actually, ridership on Metro Transit light rail is up 23% this year. The new police chief says it's in large part to several changes on the ground. The biggest challenge for the LRT might be overcoming negative perception. Passenger Ricky Greer says he's always had a positive experience. It's pleasant. I think it's really pleasant. Metro Transit police chief. So this is not O'Hara. This is the other police chief. Ernest Morales III said he also rides the Blue Line alongside his wife. First six stops were pretty comfortable. We were elated. We said, wow, that's a nice system. Then we hit Cedar Riverside. Then we hit Franklin. Oh, my gosh. Then we hit Lake Street. It's like the floor fell out from us. Maybe Morales saw what the WCCO saw a few months ago, where apparently the drug usage and exchanges like drug deals. Our rides on Monday were uneventful, though. There was security on the trains and the platforms and the station entrance. New signage was up at MSP Airport, and there are new murals and new construction on Lake Street and Target Field Station. So it looks like they're addressing this. If you care about your property and you clean it up, people will follow, said Morales. So I know a lot of people use a light rail line. And when you're going to get like a Taylor Swift concert or a Vikes game, and they got that, when they do finish that, the Southwest light rail line, that's going to be, tons of people are going to be taking that from Eden Prairie up into Eden Prairie, Minnetonka, Hopkins into downtown.
Oh, yeah, I'll certainly be one of them going to different events down there, taking that light, if it ever opens up, it seems.
It will open up eventually. But yeah, Metro the Met Council, nice job, guys, there. Here's the thing. I think we both can agree with this. It's summer. The problem is going to come when it gets cold. And you got people who are drug users who are looking for someplace they can go to use drugs. You got to be prepared for that when it starts getting cold, November, December, January, February. And yeah, I think that, you know, you've got to have a plan in place right now, because one of the reasons why a lot of that stuff has moved off the trains is it doesn't need to be on the trains now because it's, you know, not there. So my guess is going to be, do you eventually just get to a point where it's one law enforcement per train?
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think of that, the fact that it might just be due to the season, the drop in some of the criminal activity we've been seeing on the trains. So, yeah, they need a plan, though, for the winter. I think you're right that we're going to be seeing more of that.
Well, they're not going to shut it down. They need to have that conduit from the downtown to the airport hitting the Mall of America. Now they've got that. They got the one running to St. Paul. Now they got the one running out the Southwest Metro. Yeah, I don't know when the next one gets built. Eventually, they will build another one. I can tell you that right now. Eventually, the city will just keep growing and growing. I mean, you look at the city from – I was at Bidet Makoska. I'm looking at the city. You got that building being built over by Target Field, right? Then you got that building that looks like it's out of a Batman comic strip over on Washington and 35W over there. And you can tell that it's not going to be that long before – in those big gaps between those two big buildings in the downtown, that's all going to be built out. You can guarantee it's going to be. I mean, it's just they can't build them fast enough for residences downtown at this point. They can't. So I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of more people in the downtown.
Yeah, I'd be with you on that, especially building more residential areas down there. Yeah, absolutely.
And then once you get that, it's just then, you know, if you've got that big base of people living in the downtown, then getting to the airport and the Mall of America, that's a no-brainer. So, yeah, it's what they had in Seattle. That's all they had. They had the line that ran from downtown Seattle out to the Space Needle. And that was the only line it did, but it was responsible for a ton of the tourist traffic that went between the two. So that's, you know, they've changed that now in Seattle. But for a long time, that was the one, the monorail that ran between the down, back, you know, high-tech monorails. So that was the case. Speaking of police chiefs here, you and Patrick Cooligan from the Minnesota Reformer are indeed going to chime in on our current Minneapolis police chief, O'Hara, correct?
Yeah, because he had a kind of last-minute press conference, I guess you would call it, yesterday with some members of the media where they had a chance to ask questions about O'Hara hiring this guy that apparently had a big police misconduct incident out in Virginia where he was putting his knee to a back of an unarmed black man, very much in the way of kind of what we saw happen to George Floyd. So we're going to be talking about the hiring of this officer who's no longer with the department and how that ended up happening, because you think that would be a major, major red flag in the interview process saying maybe we shouldn't be bringing this guy into the Minneapolis Police Department.
I'm going to cut O'Hara some slack personally, because it's not like he's doing the hiring. I mean, he's not HR. Someone dropped the ball. And considering that there seems to be some elements within the police department trying to undermine O'Hara on this, I think we can see what happened. Someone wanted to bring this guy in, and when O'Hara realized what exactly they were trying to do, then he got rid of him. and now there's a smear campaign against O'Hara. And I think that this is – he's realizing how much fun it is going to be to revise this entire Minneapolis police department.
Yeah, and we do bring that up too, that it was only the second day, I think, on the job when he ended up interviewing this guy. But still, you would think someone – not necessarily him – someone could pull a simple Google search and figure out this guy Timberlake had quite the rap sheet on the East Coast.
Do you talk about why no one did bring that to him?
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit on there.
All right. Patrick Cooley, you know, what else are you chatting about?
Oh, and then we'll also briefly touch on Wolgamott, the DFL state representative who had a DWI charge. And then we'll also briefly touch on Starbucks union workers trying to actually bring Starbucks to the negotiating table by starting a rally and a bus tour in St. Paul going around the country.
All right. It is Patrick Cooley again from the Minnesota Reformer joining Brett right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And after a little bit of a break, thanks to the 4th of July Independence Day holiday, we are back speaking with Patrick Houlihan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, resource for Minnesota news and politics over at MinnesotaReformer.com. That's MinnesotaReformer.com, as we are going to be talking about some of the stories that they have been working on. Patrick, thanks so much for coming back on the show today.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So the first story I wanted to talk about has to do with more controversy with the Minneapolis Police Department, as current Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara has been facing criticism for his hiring of a former police officer named Tyler Timberlake, who was involved in an excessive force case in Virginia. As back in 2020, Timberlake repeatedly used a stun gun on a disoriented, unarmed black man who had been wandering around a residential street, shouting that he needed oxygen. Body camera video also shows that Timberlake then jammed his knee into the man's neck and back while he said he couldn't breathe. This was a big story out on the East Coast because of the many parallels that we had to the police murder of George Floyd, being that this incident in Virginia with Timberlake also took place in 2020. But now questions have arisen since the Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara actually hired this officer Timberlake a while back. O'Hara held a news conference yesterday as he has been trying to, well, basically clean up the Minneapolis Police Department, but this seems to be kind of a setup, or a setback, rather. So, Patrick, this all kind of started from Dina doing some digging into this guy Timberlake who was hired, correct, and then taking a look at his background, correct?
Yeah, our reporter, Dina Winter, causing problems, as always. She got a tip, this is a few months ago, that there was a guy had been hired by Minneapolis Police Department who had a really ugly incident in his background. And she looked into it, and sure enough, it's the same guy. And there was, as you noted, this incident was widely covered in certainly the Virginia media and really the Washington, D.C. Media, local media anyway, because it was video. And as the officer Timberlake, his statement here is that he thought the guy was someone else. He was terminated by his department, and he actually was charged. But he was acquitted by a jury. But if you watch the video, it's a pretty striking and shocking thing to watch. And it's just hard to believe that you could watch that video and then, and especially with Minneapolis Police Department's ugly history, that they would turn around and hire this guy. So when she first wrote the story, the chief at the time, O'Hara, said, well, I want to investigate how this happens. We need to do a top to bottom look at how we're hiring people and make sure this never happens again. And then immediately, Dina started hearing from folks, from sources who said, well, that's ridiculous for him to say that because he signed off on the hire. And then sure enough, she asked for and received documents that showed that he had signed off. I mean, his signature is on the hiring papers. The story has kind of continued because then there was a question of, well, you know, how much did O'Hara know, about this guy's background? And then in an effort to kind of clean it up yesterday, he claims that, when yes, he did sit in on the interview, but it was only his second day. And so he was kind of learning about all aspects of the department and was not really a participant in the interview, was just an observer and was unaware of the video. You know, I don't know, you know, who you to believe in this case. The department rank and file via the Police Federation, the union, have really come out hard against him and are backing Timberlake, who of course is no longer with the department as of last week. But definitely a sort of bad series of events for the chief of police, who by all accounts is reform-minded and trying to clean up the mess that is the Minneapolis Police Department. I mean, the fact that it was only his second day on the job, which is verifiable, I'm sympathetic to the idea that he was not deeply involved in the hiring of this guy if he was second day on the job. Did someone tell him, like, you know, this guy's got an ugly history, and all you had to do was Google the guy's name, which is what we did, and the history all comes up. Did somebody tell him about this? He says that yes, that there was a notation on his application, on Timberlake's application, that he was involved in a critical incident. But that would not be necessarily unusual for a police officer who's involved, who was anybody with a department that had any contact with pretty serious crime. It would be not unusual to have been involved in a critical incident. And so that's what O'Hara is saying, that there were no red flags for him because nobody told him about any kind of video or that the guy had this criminal history, of which, again, he was acquitted. Not a great week or so for Chief O'Hara. We'll see if he can bounce back.
Yeah, as you said, it certainly can be sympathetic if the interview was only on his second day of the job. But there are still some questions about what did he know and when did he know it? Because I'm even looking at the last paragraph of Dina's story, where basically it says personnel documents obtained by the reformer show O'Hara signed the letter offering Timberlake a job as a police officer. But this is what I kind of want to focus on. Key portions of the personnel documents were redacted by city attorneys, such as Timberlake's answers to a question on the application about whether he'd been suspended or terminated from a job in the past decade, and whether he'd been charged with or convicted of crimes. And his reason for leaving the Virginia Police Department where he worked was also redacted from his MPD application. So I think that only kind of leads to even more questions about what exactly O'Hara and the rest of the MPD kind of knew about this guy Timberlake, and when did they know it, since a lot of this information seems redacted that could answer a lot of these questions.
Yeah, obviously disappointing for us, and we were in the process of taking beginnings of legal action to get more documents. Because we believe that we believe should be public, and the city was fighting us on. Those redactions that you point out are pretty important, and then it just goes to, you know, the question becomes, did Timberlake, was he truthful? And, you know, when he answered those questions, we're led to believe that he was, by sources. And then, and I guess O'Hara would just say, you know, I mean, how many things does he sign in a given day? And how closely is he looking at? I mean, if the application is how many pages long, you know, is he reading the entire thing? That's a good question. I mean, maybe you think he would be, given how important it would be in his position to try to hire the absolute best and most ethical officers. That certainly leaves open, leaves a lot of questions unanswered, those redactions. We certainly would love to see those documents unredacted.
So what happens next right now with the Minneapolis Police Department? As I understand it, Timberlake and the police union are not happy about there. Could there be a threat of legal action for firing Timberlake, since they contend that, well, the MPD knew about his past? And then I guess the other question would be, what plans does Chief O'Hara have to try to prevent these types of problems from happening again at the department?
Well, we have asked if there was any kind of settlement with Timberlake as part of the separation agreement, and in that case, would there also be a non-disclosure agreement? I mean, could we be hearing from Timberlake shortly? We're kind of speculating about it. Certainly, Dina has asked him if he wants to talk, and he has, at this point, declined and hung up on her and so forth. But, yeah, that's the question is, did the city end up paying out, and is Timberlake now going to talk about what he claims is really defamation of his character? I'm pretty sure this series of events has created a lot of motivation for O'Hara to get control over the hiring process.
You can read more about Dina's great reporting on this story over at MinnesotaReformer.com, MinnesotaReformer.com. I want to move on now to another story that has to do with a member of the state legislature being charged with a DWI. DFL State Representative Dan Wolgamott, who represents a St. Cloud district, was recently arrested on suspicion of DWI in Kanabec County, which is a little bit north of the Twin Cities. What do we know so far about this case and the charges against Wolgamott?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that that came to my mind when I heard this yesterday morning, before we were able to confirm it, was that I was really not terribly surprised. Just because you hear things when you're around the Capitol, as much as I have been, and not things that you necessarily can report. I know that Wolgamott went through what I suspect was a difficult divorce, and there was an incident that I had learned of last year that we asked him about. That we ended up not reporting because it just didn't amount to news, but he had crashed his car on an icy evening, and then he walked away from it. He crashed into somebody's yard and then just walked away from it, and was ticketed with abandoning the vehicle. I thought that was kind of a strange thing to happen, and we asked him about it. He said he'd not been drinking. And so there was really nothing for us to report. People get tickets. Legislators get, traffic tickets all the time. And generally speaking, it doesn't rise to the level of news story. But the details in his this DWI citation are pretty disturbing. He was apparently spotted, according to the report, outside of a liquor store at 6 p.m. on Friday, spotted drinking, and somebody called police, who then tracked him down the road. So that's, drinking in a parking lot, if that's true, drinking in a liquor store parking lot, if that's true, that's pretty risky behavior, reckless behavior on the part of anyone, but especially a lawmaker. So I suspect that there's going to be a bit more that we're going to learn about this, because he's probably going to have to take some steps to better manage his life right now, just based on the report that we saw yesterday.
Yeah, I'm with you that in the coming days and weeks, we're probably going to be learning much more about this situation. And finally, wanted to talk about one more story, and that has to do with unionized Starbucks baristas beginning a bus tour in St. Paul in hopes of bringing the Starbucks company to the negotiating table. And that's because despite the fact that Starbucks has had 300 stores nationwide, including a number in Minnesota, set up unions, Starbucks has not negotiated a collective bargaining agreement with any of these unions. So how have these workers been saying Starbucks has been trying to kind of thwart these union efforts? Obviously, not going to the negotiating table with a collective bargaining agreement is certainly one way, but it sounds like, according to a number of these baristas, that Starbucks has been putting in a number of efforts to try to thwart the activities of the unions that have been set up.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen over the decades, probably the last five decades, the decline in, of unionization in the United States. And one reason is that it's very difficult. You very often will have to win an election, and the company has a lot of advantages in that election. And then if you're able to emerge victoriously out of that election, now you've actually got to force them to, get that first contract, which can be incredibly difficult. The companies will just absolutely refuse. That's what's happening here. I mean, one of the organizers who works in a Minneapolis store just says they're just completely refusing to negotiate. That is the company. So they're trying to whip up support for the unionization drive. I think they have a lot of customers of goodwill and want to support that unionization. So I think they're trying to rally the customer base to their side.
Well, you can read more about Max's reporting on that, Max Nesterak, over at MinnesotaReformer.com. As we are just about out of time, we have been visiting with Patrick Houlihan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, about some of the stories they've been working on. Again, make sure you go over to MinnesotaReformer.com. Patrick, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Always good chatting with you.
Always a pleasure.
And let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. If you're wondering why there's no audio no longer with the stream, apparently our brand new 10 o'clock show, Greg Bakken's got Ghost Box Radio on tonight, weeknights at 10. It's a sensational show. They had their debut last night. They're going to be on tonight as well. Apparently forgot to charge the camera. So we've reverted back to the old camera, which is the absolute worst position it could possibly be for any kind of viewing in the studio. Hello. What was the line from Nathan Lane and the producers? It's theater in the square. Nobody has a good seat. There you go. We're back to that. You can enjoy us, of course, on the broadcast, but if I'm saying this and you can't hear me, well, yeah, you've discovered the flaw. 952-946-6205. By the way, make sure you're listening to Bakken tonight. And then it's a powerhouse lineup. Rick Smith at 8 to 10, Bakken 10 to 11, and Petty Vasquez coming in at 11 to midnight right here on AM 950. Nice. Good stuff here. I mean, I have been here over 13 years. I know they haven't fired me yet. I've been here for 13 years. I don't think we've ever had as much of a powerhouse lineup as we have right now. Just from morning to night, it's just sensational. I'm just so proud to be a part of this station. 952-946-6205. I'm going to go into a story here. And I think one of the things yesterday I brought up the point we're talking about the crime stats, and actually the worst cities in Minnesota for crime are Bemidji, Brainerd, and Waite Park. Then Minneapolis is at 4, Virginia, Minnesota at 5, Mankato at 6. We talked about this, and I said the part of the problem is that I don't want I think there's a real problem if you're having this much of a crime issue in a town like Bemidji or Brainerd, and that we should definitely, give more additional resources to those communities to help deal with their crime problems. See, this is the problem. Republicans, there's a misunderstanding about what the real motivations are. Republicans scream that they're for everyone. They're for nobody. They could care less. They vilify the city, but they don't ever deliver for their own districts. They don't. They only deliver for the handful of wealthy people in their districts, and they could care less about the rest of the people in their district. They're there only for themselves. That's it. Democrats, even though they are vilified ridiculously in rural Minnesota, continually fight not just for the metro areas, but for outstate areas as well. Trust me, free school lunches is going to be a huge deal in rural Minnesota. That you just save $300 per kid per year right there. You know, paid sick leave, you're going to have, got that going on. Numerous other things. We talked about the laundry list of good things that are going to happen. On any of the border towns on the Dakotas and Iowa, Wisconsin, your small town, if there's a bridge coming across from the border, that'd be Wisconsin, but for the most part, and North Dakota, but for the most part, South Dakota and Iowa are wide open. You're going to have people coming into the state and helping out the local economy in those border communities by buying legal marijuana. Ta-da! Ta-da! That's going to be huge for Minnesota. Huge. Democrats, as much as they are vilified and as much as people in rural Minnesota scream, "You don't care about us," the reality is the only politicians in the state caring about you in rural Minnesota are the DFL. That's the only ones. Your Republicans could care less. They convince you they're doing something by screaming pseudo-racist things about the metro area, and you feel like they've done something. And the reality is as they're vilifying the metro area, not a Republican in Bemidji or Brainerd or Waite Park in those areas is doing anything to address the crime problems in those towns or in Virginia, Minnesota, or in Mankato. You got Democrats there too. They're trying to address these issues, but the Republicans, they're ignoring it because the only thing that matters to them is their narrative. This is why they got $53 in the bank. They're bankrupt. You have to, one of the things I have been very adamant about in the 13 plus years I've been on the station is you have to help out all people in the state of Minnesota. You have to. And we can identify these problems all day long. The reality is that unless people get out there and start working on them, they're not going to get done. And the reality is there's a lot of Republicans that even when you have jobs bills and infrastructure improvements in their own districts, they'll vote against the bill and then try to claim credit for passing the bill. And that's just not how it works. And DFL, by the way, you're dropping the frickin' ball by not having billboards into every town where you have a project saying the DFL did this, not the Republicans, the DFL. You need to do that. Because once again, DFL, I understand you're modest. You don't want to brag. But dude, if you don't take credit for it, the Republicans will. And that's one of the reasons you're getting your asses handed to you in some of these districts when the only people who are delivering for those communities are the DFL. So you need to get out and start bragging. This is a story, and this is definitely something we have to start addressing here because this is going to be a big problem. For the first time in 20 years, mental health and addiction are more pressing health concerns than getting access to basic health care, according to a survey of rural stakeholders. Rural Healthy People 2030, released by the Southwest Rural Health Resource Center, surveyed a national sample of people working to improve the lives and health of rural Americans to determine the most important issues facing rural residents. Participants included people working in healthcare, public administration, education, human services, and other fields as well. In 2010 and 2020, the biggest issue in the survey was access to healthcare, which we talked about a lot with the pandemic, is that that was one of the things which was the perfect storm there, is that, through cost cutting and slashing, the pandemic, it was hard to address the pandemic in rural America because there just wasn't the healthcare facilities anymore in rural America. While access to healthcare remained one of the top five issues, according to survey respondents, researchers said the growing impact of mental health and addiction took the number one and two spots on the list, regardless of age, race, religion, or region or occupation, rather, I should say. Now, the reason why I brought up initially yesterday's topic about the crime is that when you look at Brainerd and Bemidji and Virginia and these outstate areas, the crimes that they're having, a lot of them are drug crimes. But because Republicans only want you to scream about crime in Minneapolis, they ignore the crime that's going on out there. I relayed a story to someone on Twitter today about a friend of mine who used to live in Cass Lake, a Republican friend, who had a drug house next to their house for like 12 years. Eventually, it got busted, and they arrested everyone. And I asked him, so and he said, well, yeah, they busted everyone there. I said, well, didn't you know something was going on? I mean, you know, that's pretty much clear. And he said, oh, yeah, it was clear something was going on, but I didn't want to be rude. You didn't want to be rude, but it was clear something was going on. Okay. Meanwhile, this guy is also the same guy who says about when it's black kids in Minneapolis, lock them up or even shoot them. And I said, that's not being rude. But you see, there's the mentality. Because everything is being fueled by this right-wing media machine. That the drug problem in rural Minnesota and rural America is largely going unchecked because the Republicans don't want to spend any money on it. So they basically get you to forget about the drug crisis next door and then get instead say, Minneapolis. While you and your neighbors are subjected to the onslaught of drug culture. In the past two decades, healthcare access has been far and away the most important topic, no matter how to cut the data, said Timothy Callahan, one of the survey's authors. The fact that mental health and addiction came out ahead of healthcare access this time certainly surprised us, but when you start thinking about the context of the past decade and the context of the pandemic in which you launched the survey, the findings are a little bit less surprising. Callahan said the rise of the opiate epidemic prior to COVID-19 pandemic and the growing recognition of the lack of mental health resources in rural America since the pandemic may be part of the reason. Now, we've talked about this. I've had guests on. That is indeed a massive problem right now, is you do not have the mental health resources in rural America. And there are some real mental health issues when it comes to the farmers and that the stresses and the difficulties they're going through. You need to have mental health care out there. Once again, Republicans aren't going to spend a damn dime trying to expand mental health care out in rural America. Instead, it's the DFL you got to work with. And right now, they're the ones that are trying to help. Changes in healthcare through the Affordable Care Act may have improved healthcare access, bringing other issues to the top of the list. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, nearly 20 million people signed up for insurance as part of the Affordable Care Act during the open enrollment this last year. During the 2022, 35 million people signed up for insurance during the open enrollment period, 21 million of whom were part of Medicaid expansion. Still, the fact that mental health and addiction rose to the top across all categories was striking. Mental health, number one. Addiction was number two. And I'll talk about this in the Midwest, and both of those numbers match up. Mental health was number one nationally and in the Midwest. Addiction was number two nationally and in the Midwest. Healthcare access and quality was number three in the national rank and tied for third in the Midwest. Overweight and obesity was number four on the national rank, and it tied for third in the Midwest. Drug and alcohol use is five in both the national rank and Midwest. Nutrition and healthy eating, six in nationally and six as well in the Midwest. They talk about, and basically the other top 10 here are older adults, preventive care, diabetes, economic stability. You're going to see small changes in characteristics over the course of decades, but the extent to which mental health and addiction have risen are so consistently selected by stakeholders. And the reason why is that because there has been the drug addiction issues in rural America for the last 30 years. My God, there was a woman who we had on for one of the holiday interviews a few years back who wrote a book about, it was a man that wrote a book about drug addiction in rural Missouri. And they're not doing a damn thing down there to try to address that. Drug addiction is crazy throughout, Iowa, Dakotas, Minnesota. Republicans could care less. They don't care. They've got tax breaks to give wealthy people. That's the only spending they want to do. They love socialism when it's giving farmers, you know, ag subsidies. Then they can't get enough socialism. But helping the drug addicts of a community or helping people with mental health issues, which has been a growing crisis. And I would say of the two issues, mental health issues, it's clear that the pandemic expedited the mental health issue dramatically. And that with that, it became a much more prominent issue that had to be addressed. According to the Pew Research Center, an estimated 4% of American adults suffered from increased mental health issues during the pandemic. The survey done by the Kaiser Family Foundation found that 90% of the American public felt the country was facing a mental health crisis. I've had mental health experts on the air with us, and they've said the same exact thing. Adults across the country during the pandemic reported increased symptoms of anxiety, depression, hopelessness, and sadness, and suicidal ideation, as well as increased drug and alcohol use. In all, 1,291 respondents answered at least one of the questions between July 2021 and February 2022. The DFL has done a lot of good things this last session. We next year need to have a very long talk about mental health issues and dealing with the drug crisis, particularly in rural America and rural Minnesota. Because if we don't start figuring out some way to get more mental health professionals into rural Minnesota, not only are people going to be leaving, you know, if the only healthcare options they have are in the metro area, they're going to leave the communities anyway. And that's something we got to try to address in some capacity. But the reality is this is only going to get worse on both of those fronts. And I can tell you right now, the Republicans will not help their constituents when it comes to drug issues and mental health issues. They just will not. Tax breaks are more important to them than anything else, and they could care less. And it doesn't matter if what a tax break does for you if you're a drug addict. It doesn't matter what a tax break does for you when you need mental health services and there isn't a mental health professional for 100 miles around you. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Hey, by the way, going back to earlier this hour when we talked about Minnesota is the best biking city in the nation and that Metro Transit ridership is up 23%. I got more bad news for you Republicans out there. Well, more than the fact that, once again, in case you missed the breaking news at the beginning of the show, the Minnesota Republican Party apparently has $53 in the bank. A whole $53. Good luck with that. Anyway, looking at CNBC, you know that liberal pit, CNBC. CNBC has ranked America's top states for business. And I'll tell you right now, Republicans are going, oh, yeah, Matt. Is Minnesota 49 or 50? Actually, they're five. That's right. Republicans just spit out their drink. And, yep, number five in the country, Minnesota. The current rankings. This is a story released today at 8:13 a.m. So after the liberal agenda passed, Republicans, Minnesota is ranked as the fifth best state in the nation for business. Number five. North Carolina is one, Virginia, which is generally more North Carolina more Republican, Virginia more Democrat, Tennessee and Georgia, you know, Tennessee more Republican, Georgia's kind of toss up, Minnesota very liberal. Number five. They did very well here. And as a matter of fact, it's funny because you'll hear, you know how South Dakota goes, we're a great state for business. Are you? Because you're 34. That's from CNBC. That's 34. You're number 34 on that list. What you're a great state for is basically executives jamming as much of their company's cash in their pockets. but not for much else. So, yeah, maybe we shouldn't allow that hospital merger. Wisconsin's 33. Ah, sucks to be you. North Dakota comes in at 36, and Iowa is a far in our rearview mirror, 23. Once again, Minnesota, number 5. Now, I have said these positive things about Minneapolis, Minnesota, and stuff like this. This is my impression of a Republican right now. Delicious. Hey, Republicans, why are you here? Go. You can go to your North Dakotas and South Dakotas and Wisconsin and Iowa. Go there. It's much more happy. You'll be happier. We will be happier because we're not going to miss you. Don't make up false excuses about jobs or anything. Just go and leave us to our little utopia of the North. Bon voyage. Native Roots Radio, that's up next. We are back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.